my shoulder. The council just passed a decree lowering the guardian age to 16. Dampiers will graduate when they're sophomores, and then go out for assignments. What? Surely I'd misheard. You know how panicked they've been about protection and not having enough guardians, right? He sighed. This was their solution to increasing your numbers. But they're too young, I cried. How can anyone think 16-year-olds are ready to go out and fight? Well, said Adrian, because you testified that they were. My mouth dropped, everything freezing around me. You testified that they were? No, it couldn't be possible. Adrian gently nudged my arm, trying to shake me out of my stupor. Come on, they're still wrapping up. They made the announcement in an open session, and some people are a little upset. Yeah, I'll say. He didn't need to tell me twice. I immediately started to follow, then realized I was in my pajamas. I quickly changed and brushed my hair, still scarcely able to believe what he'd just said. My preparation only took 5 minutes, and then we were out the door. Adrian wasn't overly athletic, but he kept a pretty good pace as we headed toward the council's hall. How did this happen? I asked. You don't really mean that? That what I said played a role? I'd meant my words to be a demand, but they came out with more of a pleading note. He lit a cigarette without breaking stride, and I didn't bother chastising him for it. It's apparently been a hot topic for a while. It was a pretty close vote. The people pushing for it knew they'd need to show a lot of evidence to win. You were their grand prize. A teen Dampier slaying Strigoi left and right, long before graduation. Not that long, I muttered, my fury kindling. 16? Were they serious? It was ludicrous. The fact that I had been unknowingly used to support this decree made me sick to my stomach. I'd been a fool thinking they'd all ignored my rule-breaking and had simply paraded me in to praise me. They'd used me. Tatiana had used me. When we reached it, the council hall was in as much chaos as Adrian had implied. True, I hadn't spent a lot of time in these kinds of meetings, but I was pretty sure that people standing up in clusters and yelling at each other wasn't normal. The council's herald probably didn't usually scream himself hoarse trying to bring order to the crowd, either. The only spot of calm was Tatiana herself, sitting patiently in her seat at the center of the table, just as council etiquette dictated. She looked very pleased with herself. The rest of her colleagues had lost all sense of propriety and were on their feet like the audience, arguing amongst themselves or anyone else ready to pick a fight. I stared in amazement, unsure what to do in all this disorder. Who voted for what? I asked. Adrian studied the council members and ticked them off on his fingers. Zelsky, Ozera, Bodica, Dashkov, Konta, and Drozdov. They were against it. Ozera? I asked in surprise. I didn't know the Ozera princess, Yvette, very well, but she'd always seemed pretty stiff and unpleasant. I had new respect for her now. Adrian nodded over to where Tasha was furiously addressing a large group of people, eyes flashing and arms waving wildly. Yvette was persuaded by some of her family members. That made me smile too, but only for a moment. It was good that Tasha and Christian were being acknowledged amongst their clan again, but the rest of our problem was still alive and kicking. I could deduce the rest of the names. So, Prince Ivashkov voted for it, I said. Adrian shrugged by way of apology for his family. Lazar, Zeklos, Taras, and Voda. That the Voda family would vote for extra protection wasn't entirely a surprise, considering the recent slaughter of one of their members. Priscilla wasn't even in her grave yet, and the new Voda prince, Alexander, seemed clearly unsure what to do with his sudden promotion. I gave Adrian a sharp look. That's only 5-6. Oh. Realization dawned. Shit. Royal tiebreaker. The Moroi voting system had been set up with 12 members, one for each family, and then whoever the reigning king or queen was. True, it often meant one group got two votes, since the monarch rarely voted against his or her own family. It had been known to happen. Regardless, the system should have had 13 votes, preventing ties. Except, a recent problem had developed. There were no Dragomirs on the council anymore, meaning ties could occur. In that rare event, Moroi law dictated that the monarch's vote carried extra weight. I'd heard that had always been controversial, and yet, at the same time, there wasn't much to be done for it. Ties in the council would mean nothing ever got settled, and since monarchs were elected, many took it on faith that they would act in the best interests of the Moroi. Tatiana's was the sixth, I said, and hers swayed it. Glancing around, I saw a bit of anger on the faces of those from the families who had voted against the decree. Apparently, not everyone believed Tatiana had acted in the best interest of the Moroi. Lissa's presence sang to me through the bond, so her arrival a few moments later was no surprise. News had spread fast, though she didn't know yet the fine details. Adrian and I waved her over. She was as dumbfounded as we were.
"How could they do that?"
she asked. "Because they're too afraid that someone might make them learn to defend themselves. Tasha's group was getting too loud." Lissa shook her head.
"No, not just that. I mean, why were they even in session? We should be in mourning after what happened the other day. Publicly. The whole court, not just some secret part of it. One of the council members even died. Couldn't they wait for the funeral?"
In her mind's eye, I could see the images from that grisly night where Priscilla had died right before Lissa's eyes.
"But was easily replaceable," a new voice said.
Christian had joined us. Lissa took a few steps away from him, still annoyed about Mia.
"And actually, it's the perfect time. The people who wanted this had to jump at their chance. Every time there's a big Strigoi fight, everyone panics. Fear will make a lot of people get on board with this. And if any council members were undecided before this, that battle probably pushed them over."
That was pretty wise reasoning for Christian, and Lissa was impressed, despite her troubled feelings for him right now. The council's herald finally managed to make his voice heard over the shouts of the audience. I wondered if the group would have quieted down if Tatiana herself had started yelling at them to shut up. But no, that was probably beneath her dignity. She was still sitting there calmly like nothing unusual was going on. Nonetheless, it took several moments for everyone to settle down and take their seats. My friends and I hurriedly grabbed the first ones we could find. With peace and quiet achieved at last, the weary-looking herald yielded the floor to the queen. Smiling grandly at the assembly, she addressed them in her most imperious voice.
"We'd like to thank everyone for coming today and expressing your opinions. I know some are still unsure about this decision, but Moroi law has been followed here. Laws that have been in place for centuries. We will have another session soon to listen to what you have to say in an orderly fashion."
Something told me that was an empty gesture. People could talk all they wanted. She wouldn't listen.
"This decision, this verdict, will benefit the Moroi. Our guardians are already so excellent."
She gave a condescending nod toward the ceremonial guardians standing along the room's walls. They wore typically neutral faces, but I was guessing that, like me, they probably wanted to punch half the council.
"They are so excellent, in fact, that they train their students to be ready to defend us at an early age. We will all be safer from tragedies like that which recently occurred."
She lowered her head a moment, in what must have been a show of grieving. I recalled last night when she'd choked up over Priscilla. Had that been an act? Was her best friend's death a convenient way for Tatiana to push forward with her own agenda? Surely she wasn't that cold. The queen lifted her head and continued.
"And again, we're happy to listen to you register your opinions, although by our own laws, this matter is settled. Further sessions will have to wait until an adequate period of mourning has passed for the unfortunate departed.
Her tone and body language implied that this was indeed the end of the discussion. Then, an impertinent voice suddenly broke the room's silence. My voice. Well, I'd kind of like to register my opinion now. Inside my head, Lissa was shouting, "Sit down! Sit down!" But I was already on my feet, moving toward the council's table. I stopped at a respectful distance, one that would let them notice me, but not get me tackled by guardians. And oh, they noticed me. The herald flushed bright red at my rule-breaking.
"You are out of line and in violation of all council protocol. Sit down right now before you are removed."
He glanced over at the guardians, like he expected them to come charging forward right then. None of them moved. Either they didn't perceive me as a threat, or they were wondering what I was going to do. I was also wondering this. With a small, delicate hand gesture, Tatiana waved the herald back.
"I dare say there's been so much breach of protocol today that one more incident won't make a difference."
She fixed me with a kind smile, one that was apparently intended to make us look like friends.
"Besides, Guardian Hathaway is one of our most valuable assets. I'm always interested in what she has to say."
Was she really? Time to find out. I addressed my words to the council. "This thing you've just passed is utterly and totally insane. I considered it a great feat on my part that I didn't use any swear words there, because I had some adjectives in mind that were much more fitting."
"Who said I didn't understand council etiquette?"
"How can any of you sit there and think it's okay to send 16-year-olds out to risk their lives?"
"It's only 2 years difference," said the Taurus Prince. "It's not like we're sending 10-year-olds.
2 years is a lot." I thought for a moment about when I'd been 16. What had happened in those 2 years? I'd run off with Lissa, watched friends die, traveled around the world, fallen in love. "You can live a lifetime in 2 years. And if you want us to keep being on the front lines, which most of us willingly do when we graduate, then you owe us those 2 years." This time, I glanced back at the audience. The reactions were mixed. Some clearly agreed with me, nodding along. Some looked as though nothing in the world would change their minds about the decree being just. Others wouldn't meet my eyes. Had I swayed them? Were they undecided? Embarrassed at their own selfishness? They might be the keys.
"Believe me, I would love to see your people enjoy their youth."
This was Nathan Ivashkov speaking.
"But right now, that's not an option we have. The Strigoi are closing in. We're losing more Moroi and Guardians every day. Getting more fighters out there will stop this. And really, we're just letting those Dampier's skills go to waste by waiting a couple years. This plan will protect both our races."
"It'll kill mine off faster," I said, realizing I might start shouting if I lost control. I took a deep breath before going on. "They won't be ready. They won't have all the training they need." And that was where Tatiana herself made her master play.
"Yet by your own admission, you were certainly prepared at a young age. You killed more Strigoi before you were 18 than some Guardians kill their entire lives."
I fixed her with a narrow-eyed look. I said coldly, "had an excellent instructor. One that you currently have locked up. If you want to talk about skills going to waste, then go look in your own jail." There was a slight stirring in the audience, and Tatiana's "we're pals" face grew a little cold.
"That is not an issue we are addressing today. Increasing our protection is. I believe you have even commented in the past that the Guardian ranks are lacking in numbers."
My own words thrown back at me from last night.
"They need to be filled. You and many of your companions have proven you're able to defend us.
We were exceptions. It was egotistical, but it was the truth. Not all novices have reached that level. A dangerous glint appeared in her eye, and her voice grew silky smooth again.
Well, then, perhaps we need more excellent training. Perhaps we should send you to St. Vladimir's or some other academy so that you can improve your young colleague's education. My understanding is that your upcoming assignment will be a permanent administrative one here at court. If you wanted to help make this new decree successful, we could change that assignment and make you an instructor instead. It might speed up your return to a bodyguard assignment.
I gave her a dangerous smile of my own.
Do not, I warned, try to threaten, bribe, or blackmail me ever. You won't like the consequences.
That might have been going too far. People in the audience exchanged startled looks. Some of their expressions were disgusted, as though they could expect nothing better of me. I recognized a few of those Moroi. They were ones I'd overheard talking about my relationship with Adrian and how the Queen hated it. I also suspected a number of royals from last night's ceremony were here, too. They'd seen Tatiana lead me out and no doubt thought my outburst and disrespect today were a type of revenge. The Moroi weren't the only ones who reacted. Regardless of whether they shared my opinions, a few guardians stepped forward. I made sure to stay exactly where I was, and that, along with Tatiana's lack of fear, kept them in place.
We're getting weary of this conversation, Tatiana said, switching to the royal we. You can speak more, and do so in the proper manner, when we have our next meeting and open the floor to comments. For now, whether you like it or not, this resolution has been passed. It's law.
She's letting you off. Lys's voice was back in my head. Back away from this before you do something that'll get you in real trouble. Argue later. It was ironic because I'd been on the verge of exploding and letting my full rage out. Lys's words stopped me, but not because of their content. It was Lyssa herself. When Adrian and I had discussed the results earlier, I'd noted one piece of faulty logic.
It wasn't a fair vote, I declared. It wasn't legal.
Are you a lawyer now, Miss Hathaway?
The Queen was amused, and her dropping of my guardian title now was a blatant lack of respect.
If you're referring to the monarch's vote carrying more weight than others on the council, then we can assure you that that has been Moroi law for centuries in such situations.
She glanced at her fellow council members, none of whom raised a protest. Even those who'd voted against her couldn't find fault with her point.
Yeah, but the entire council didn't vote, I said. You've had an empty spot in the council for the last few years, but not anymore.
I turned and pointed at where my friends were sitting.
Vasilisa Dragomir is 18 now and can fill her family's spot.
In all of this chaos, her birthday had been overlooked, even by me. The eyes in the room turned on Lyssa, something she did not like. However, Lyssa was used to being in the public eye. She knew what was expected of a royal, how to look and carry herself. So, rather than cringing, she sat up straight and stared ahead with a cool, regal look that said she could walk up to that table right now and demand her birthright. Whether it was that magnificent attitude alone, or maybe a little spirit charisma, she was almost impossible to look away from. Her beauty had its usual luminous quality, and around the room, a lot of the faces held the same awe for her that I'd observed around court. Dimitri's transformation was still an enigma, but those who believed in it were indeed regarding her as some kind of saint. She was becoming larger than life in so many people's eyes, both with her family name and mysterious powers. And now, the alleged ability to restore Strigoi. Smug, I looked back at Tatiana.
Isn't 18 the legal voting age?
checkmate, bitch.
Yes, she said cheerfully. If the Dragomirs had a quorum.
I wouldn't say my stunning victory exactly shattered at that point, but it certainly lost a little of its luster. A what?
A quorum. By law, for a Moroi family to have a council vote, they must have a family. She does not. She's the only one.
I stared in disbelief. What? You're saying she needs to go have a kid to get a vote? Tatiana grimaced.
Not now, of course. Someday, I'm sure. For a family to have a vote, they must have at least two members, one of whom must be over 18. It's Moroi law. Again, a law that's been in the books for centuries.
A few people were exchanging confused and surprised looks. This was clearly not a law many were familiar with. Of course, this situation, a royal line reduced to one person, wasn't one that had occurred in recent history, if it had ever occurred at all.
It's true, said Ariana Zelsky reluctantly. I've read it.
Okay, that was when my stunning victory shattered. The Zelsky family was one I trusted, and Ariana was the older sister of the guy my mom protected. Ariana was a pretty bookish kind of person, and seeing as she'd voted against the guardian age change, it seemed unlikely she'd offer this piece of evidence if it weren't true. With no more ammunition, I resorted to old standbys. That, I told Tatiana, is the most fucked up law I have ever heard. That did it. The audience broke into shocked chatter, and Tatiana gave up on whatever pretense of friendliness she'd been clinging to. She beat the herald to any orders he might have given.
Remove her!
Shouted Tatiana. Even with the rapidly growing noise, her voice rang clearly through the room.
We will not tolerate this sort of vulgar behavior!
I had guardians on me in a flash. Honestly, with how often I'd been dragged away from places lately, there was almost something comfortably familiar about it. I didn't fight the guardians as they led me to the door, but I also didn't let them take me without a few parting words.
You could change the quorum law if you wanted, you sanctimonious bitch! I yelled back. You're twisting the law because you're selfish and afraid. You're making the worst mistake of your life. You'll regret it. Wait and see. You'll wish you'd never done it.
I don't know if anyone heard my tirade because by then, the hall was back to the chaos it had been in when I entered. The guardians, three of them, didn't let go of me until we were outside. Once they released me, we all stood around awkwardly for a moment. What now? I asked. I tried to keep the anger out of my voice. I was still furious and worked up, but it wasn't these guys' fault. Are you going to lock me up? Seeing as it would bring me back to Dimitri, it would almost be a reward.
They only said to remove you,
one of the guardians pointed out.
No one said what to do with you after that.
Another guardian, old and grizzled but still fierce-looking, gave me a wry look.
I'd take off while you can, before they really have a chance to punish you.
Not that they won't find you if they really want to,
added the first guardian. With that, the three of them headed back inside, leaving me confused and upset. My body was still revved for a fight, and I was filled with the frustration I always experienced whenever I was faced with a situation I felt powerless in. All that yelling for nothing. I'd accomplished nothing.
Rose?
I shifted from my churning emotions and looked up at the building. The older guardian hadn't gone inside and still stood in the doorway. His face was stoic, but I thought I saw a twinkle in his eye.
For what it's worth,
he told me.
I thought you were fantastic in there.
I didn't feel much like smiling, but my lips betrayed me. Thanks, I said. Well, maybe I'd accomplished one thing. Chapter 22. I didn't take the guy's advice and tear off out of there, though I didn't exactly sit on the front step either. I lingered nearby in a cluster of cherry trees, figuring it would only be a matter of time before the assembly ended and people spilled out the doors. After several minutes passed and nothing happened, I flipped into Lissa's mind and discovered things were still in full force. Despite Tatiana declaring twice now that the session was over, people were still standing around and arguing in groups. Tasha was standing in one such group with Lissa and Adrian, making one of the impassioned speeches she was so good at. Tasha might not be as coldly calculating as Tatiana was when it came to political moves, but Tasha did have a keen sense of ripples in the system and recognized opportunities when they came. She was against the age-lowering decree. She was for teaching Maroy to fight. Neither of those was getting her very far, so she jumped on the next best thing. Lissa.
Why are we arguing among ourselves about how best to kill Strigoi when we can save them?
Tasha put one arm around Lissa and one around Adrian, drawing them both forward. Lissa still wore her serenely confident look, but Adrian looked ready to bolt if given half a chance.
Vasilisa, who, by the way, is indeed being denied her fair voice here, thanks to an archaic law, has shown that Strigoi can be brought back.
That hasn't been proven,
exclaimed one man in the crowd.
Are you kidding? Asked a woman beside him. My sister was with the group that brought him back. She says he's definitely a Dompier. He was even out in the sun.
Tasha nodded in approval at the woman.
I was there as well, and now we have two spirit users capable of doing this for other Strigoi.
As much as I respected Tasha, I wasn't entirely with her on this. The amount of power, not to mention effort involved in the staking, that Lissa had required with Dimitri had been staggering. It had even temporarily hurt the bond. That didn't mean she couldn't do it again. Nor did it mean she wouldn't want to again. She was just naively compassionate enough to throw herself into the line of fire to help others. But I knew the more power a spirit user wielded, the quicker they'd travel down the road to insanity. And Adrian, well, he was almost a non-issue here. Even if he wanted to go staking Strigoi, he didn't have the kind of healing power it would take to restore one. At least not now. It wasn't uncommon for Maroy to use their elements in different ways. Some fire users, like Christian, had skilled control of flame itself. Others could only use their magic to, say, warm the air in a room. Likewise, Lissa and Adrian had their strengths with spirit. His greatest healing triumph was mending a fracture, and she still couldn't walk dreams, no matter how much she practiced. So, really, Tasha had one spirit user capable of saving Strigoi, and that one could hardly transform legions of those monsters. Tasha did seem to recognize this a little.
The council shouldn't be wasting time with age laws, she continued. We need to sink our resources into finding more spirit users and recruiting them to help save Strigoi.
She fixed her gaze on someone in the crowd.
Martin, didn't your brother get turned against his will? With enough work, we could bring him back to you. Alive, just like you knew him. Otherwise, he's just going to get staked when guardians find him. And of course, he'll be slaughtering innocents along the way.
Yeah, Tasha was good. She could paint a good image and nearly brought that Martin guy to tears. She didn't really mention people who'd turned Strigoi willingly. Lissa, still standing with her, wasn't sure how she felt about the idea of a Strigoi saving spirit army. But she did recognize how this was all part of several other plans Tasha had, including one to get Lissa voting rights. Tasha played up Lissa's abilities and character, scoffing at what was clearly an outdated law from an era that never could have foreseen this situation. Tasha further pointed out that a full council of 12 families would send a message to Strigoi everywhere about Maroy unity. I didn't want to hear any more. I'd let Tasha wield her political magic and talk more to Lissa later. I was still so agitated about what had happened when I'd yelled at the council that I couldn't stand to see that room anymore. I left her mind and returned to my own, yelping when I saw a face right in front of mine.
Ambrose!
one of the best-looking Dompiers on the planet. After Dimitri, of course. Flashed me a gleaming movie star smile.
You were so still. I thought maybe you were trying to be a dryad.
I blinked.
A what?
He gestured to the cherry trees.
Nature spirits. Beautiful women who become one with trees.
I'm not sure if that was a compliment or not, I said. But it's good to see you again. Ambrose was a true oddity in our culture. A male Dompier who had neither taken guardian vows nor run off to hide among humans. Female Dompiers often chose not to join the Guardians in order to focus on raising families. That's why we were so rare. But men, they had no excuse as far as most people were concerned. Rather than skulk off in disgrace, however, Ambrose had chosen to stay and simply work for the Moroi another way. He was essentially a servant, a high-class one who served drinks at elite parties and gave massages to royal women. He also, if rumors were true, served Tatiana in physical ways. That was so creepy, though. I promptly put it out of my mind.
You too,
he told me.
But if you aren't communing with nature, what are you doing?
It's a long story. I kind of got thrown out of a council meeting. He looked impressed.
Literally thrown out?
Dragged, I guess. I'm surprised I haven't seen you around, I mused. Of course, I've kind of been, distracted this last week.
So I've heard,
he said, giving me a sympathetic look.
Although, I actually have been away. Just got back last night.
Just in time for the fun, I muttered. The guileless look on his face told me he hadn't heard about the decree yet.
What are you doing now?
He asked.
This doesn't look like punishment. Did you finish your sentence?
Something like that. I'm kind of waiting for someone now. Was just going to hang out in my room.
Well, if you're killing time, why don't you come see Aunt Rhonda?
Rhonda? I scowled. No offense, but your aunt didn't really impress me with her abilities last time.
None taken,
he said cheerfully.
But she's been wondering about you, and Vasilisa. So if you're just hanging around...
I hesitated. He was right that I had nothing better to do right now. I was stuck on options with both Dimitri and the council's idiotic resolutions. Yet Rhonda, his fortune-telling Moroi aunt, wasn't someone I really wanted to see again. Despite my glib words, the truth was that in retrospect, some of Rhonda's predictions had come true. I just didn't like what they'd been. Fine, I said, trying to look bored. Make it fast. He smiled again, like he could see through my ruse, and led me off to a building I'd been to once before. It housed a luxurious salon and spa frequented by Royal Moroi. Lissa and I had had our nails done there, and as Ambrose and I wound our way through it to Rhonda's lair, I felt a strange pang within me. Manicures and pedicures, they seemed like the most trivial things in the world. But on that day, they'd been wonderful. Lissa and I had laughed and grown closer, just before the school was attacked and everything fell apart. Rhonda told fortunes in a back room that was far from the busy spa. Despite the seedy feel of it, she did a pretty brisk business and even had her own receptionist. Or, well, she used to. This time, the desk was empty, and Ambrose led me straight through to Rhonda's room. It looked exactly the same as before, like being inside a heart. Everything was red. The wallpaper, the decorations, and the cushions covering the floor. Rhonda herself sat on the floor, eating a cup of yogurt, which seemed terribly ordinary for someone who allegedly wielded mystical powers. Curly black hair cascaded around her shoulders, making the large gold hoops in her ears gleam. Rose Hathaway, she said happily, setting the yogurt aside. What a nice surprise. Shouldn't you have seen me coming? I asked dryly. Her lips twitched with amusement.
That's not my power.
Sorry to interrupt your dinner,
Ambrose said, gracefully folding his muscled body as he sat down.
But Rose isn't easy to catch hold of.
I imagine not, she said. I'm impressed you got her to come at all. What can I do for you today, Rose?
I shrugged and sank down beside Ambrose.
I don't know, I'm only here because Ambrose talked me into it.
She didn't think your last reading was very good, he said.
Hey, I shot him a chastising look. That's not exactly what I said. Last time, Lyssa and Dimitri had been with me. Rhonda's tarot cards had shown Lyssa crowned with power and light. No surprise. Rhonda had said Dimitri would lose what he valued most. And he had. His soul. And me? Rhonda had bluntly told me that I'd kill the undead. I'd scoffed at that, knowing I had a lifetime of Strigoi killing ahead of me. Now I wondered if undead meant the Strigoi part of Dimitri. Even if I hadn't driven the stake, I'd certainly played a major role.
Maybe another reading would help the other one make more sense, she offered.
My mind was putting together another fraud psychic joke, which was why it was so astonishing when my mouth said, That's the problem. The other one did make sense.
I'm afraid of what else the cards will show. The cards don't make the future, she said gently. If something's meant to be, it'll be. Regardless of whether you see it here. And even then, well, the future is always changing. If we had no choices, there'd be no point in living.
See now, I said flippantly. That's the kind of vague gypsy response I was hoping for.
Roma, she corrected. Not gypsy.
Despite my snark, she still seemed to be in a good mood. Easygoing attitudes must have run in their family.
Do you want the cards or not?
Did I? She was right about one thing. The future would unfold with or without me seeing it in the cards. And even if the cards showed it, I probably wouldn't understand it until afterward.
Okay, I said.
Just for fun. I mean, last time was probably a lucky guess. Rhonda rolled her eyes but said nothing as she began shuffling her tarot deck. She did it with such precision that the cards seemed to move themselves. When she finally stopped, she handed the deck to me to cut. I did, and she put it back together.
We did 3 cards before, she said. We've got time to do more if you'd like. 5, perhaps?
The more there are, the more likely it is that anything can get explained.
If you don't believe in them, then it shouldn't be an issue.
Okay, then, 5. She grew serious as she flipped out the cards, her eyes carefully studying them. 2 of the cards had come out upside down. I didn't take that as a good sign. Last time I'd learned that it made seemingly happy cards, well, not so happy. The first one was the 2 of Cups, showing a man and a woman together in a grassy, flower-filled field while the sun shone above them. Naturally, it was upside down.
Cups are tied to emotions, Rhonda explained. The 2 of Cups shows a union, a perfect love and blossoming of joyous emotions. But since it's inverted...
You know what? I interrupted. I think I'm getting the hang of this. You can skip that one. I have a good idea what it means. It might as well have been Dimitri and me on that card. The cup empty and full of heartache. I really didn't want to hear Rhonda analyze what was already tearing my heart up. So she went on to the next one. The Queen of Swords, also upside down.
Cards like this refer to specific people, Rhonda told me.
The Queen of Swords looked very imperious, with auburn hair and silver robes.
The Queen of Swords is clever. She thrives on knowledge, can outwit her enemies, and is ambitious.
I sighed. But upside down. Upside down, said Rhonda. All of those traits get twisted. She's still smart, still trying to get her way, but she's doing it through insincere ways. There's a lot of hostility and deception here. I'd say you have an enemy.
Yeah, I said, eyeing the crown. I think I can guess who. I just called her a sanctimonious bitch.
Rhonda didn't comment and moved on to the next one. It was facing the right way, but I kind of wished it wasn't. It had a whole bunch of swords stuck in the ground and a woman tied and blindfolded to one. 8 of swords.
Oh, come on, I exclaimed. What is it with me and swords? You gave me one this depressing last time.
It had shown a woman weeping in front of a wall of swords.
That was the 9 of swords, she agreed. It could always be worse.
I have a hard time believing that. She picked up the rest of the deck and scanned through it, finally pulling out one card. The 10 of swords.
You could have drawn this.
It showed a dead guy lying on the ground with a bunch of swords driven through him.
Point taken, I said.
Ambrose chuckled beside me.
What's the 9 mean?
The 9 is being trapped, unable to get out of a situation. It can also mean slander or accusation, summoning courage to escape something.
I glanced back at the queen, thinking of the things I'd said in the council room.
Those would definitely count as accusations. And being trapped, well, there was always the possibility of a lifetime of paperwork.
I sighed. Okay, what's the next one? It was the best-looking one in the bunch, the 6 of swords. It had a bunch of people in a boat, rowing off over moonlit water.
A journey, she said.
I was just on a journey, a few of them. I eyed her suspiciously.
Man, this isn't like some kind of a spiritual journey, is it?
Ambrose laughed again.
Rose, I wish you'd get tarot readings every day.
Rhonda ignored him.
If it were in cups, maybe. But swords are tangible. Action. A true out-and-about journey. Where on earth would I go? Did it mean I was traveling to the academy like Tatiana had suggested? Or was it possible that, in spite of all my rule-breaking and calling Her Royal Highness names, I might actually get an assignment after all? One away from court?
You could be looking for something. It may be a physical journey combined with a spiritual journey, she said, which sounded like a total way to cover her ass.
This last one, her eyebrows knitted into a frown at the 5th card. This is hidden from me.
I peered at it.
The Page of Cups. Seems pretty obvious. It's a page with, cups.
Usually I have a clear vision. The cards speak to me and how they connect. This one's not clear.
The only thing that's not clear is whether it's a girl or a boy. The person on the card looked young, but had hair and an androgynous face that made the gender impossible to determine. The blue tights and tunic didn't help, though the sunny field in the background seemed promising.
It can be either, Rhonda said. It's the lowest in rank of the cards that represent people in each suit. King, queen, knight, and then page. Whoever the page is, it's someone trustworthy and creative, optimistic. It could mean someone who goes on the journey with you, or maybe the reason for your journey.
Whatever optimism or truth I'd had in the cards pretty much disappeared with that. Given that she'd just said about 100 things it could be, I didn't really consider it authoritative. Usually, she noticed my skepticism, but her attention was still on the card as she frowned.
but I just can't tell. There's a cloud around it. Why? It doesn't make sense. Something about her confusion sent a chill down my spine. I always told myself this was fake, but if she'd been making it all up, well, wouldn't she have made something up about the Page of Cups? She wasn't putting on a very convincing act if this last card was making her question herself. The thought that maybe there was some mystical force out there blocking her sobered up my cynical attitude. With a sigh, she looked up at last. Sorry, that's all I can tell you. Did the rest help? I scanned the cards. Heartache. An enemy. Accusations. Entrapment. Travel. Some of it tells me things I already know. The rest leaves me with more questions. She smiled knowingly. That's how it usually is. I thanked her for the reading, secretly glad I didn't have to pay for it. Ambrose walked me out, and I tried to shake off the mood Rhonda's fortune had left me in. I had enough problems in my life without letting a bunch of stupid cards bother me.
You going to be okay?
He asked when we finally emerged. The sun was climbing higher. The royal court would be going to bed soon, ending what had been a turbulent day.
I wouldn't have brought you if I'd known how much it would upset you.
No, no, I said. It's not the cards, not exactly. There's a bunch of other things going on, one you should probably know about. I hadn't wanted to bring up the decree when we'd first run into each other. But as a Dampier, he had a right to hear about what had happened. His face was perfectly still as I spoke, save for his dark brown eyes, which grew wider while the story progressed.
There's some mistake, he said at last. They wouldn't do that. They wouldn't do that to 16-year-olds.
Yeah, well, I didn't think so either. But they were apparently serious enough about it to throw me out when I, questioned it.
I can just imagine your questioning. All this'll do is make more Dampiers drop out of the Guardians. Unless, of course, being that young makes them more open for brainwashing.
Kind of a sensitive area for you, huh? I asked. After all, he too was a Guardian dropout. He shook his head.
Staying in this society was nearly impossible for me. If any of those kids do decide to drop out, they won't have the powerful friends I did. They'll be outcasts. That's all this'll do. Either kill off teens or cut them off from their own people.
I wondered what powerful friends he'd had, but this was hardly the time to learn his life history.
Well, that royal bitch doesn't seem to care.
The thoughtful, distracted look in his eyes suddenly sharpened.
Don't call her that,
he warned with a glare.
This isn't her fault.
Whoa. Cue surprise.
I'd almost never seen sexy, charismatic Ambrose be anything but friendly.
Of course it's her fault. She's the supreme ruler of the Moroi, remember?
His scowl deepened.
The council voted too, not her alone.
Yeah, but she voted in support of this decree. She swayed the vote.
There must have been a reason. You don't know her like I do. She wouldn't want this kind of thing.
I started to ask if he was out of his mind, but paused when I remembered his relationship with the queen. Those romantic rumors made me queasy. But if they were true, I supposed he might have legitimate concern for her. I also decided it was probably best that I didn't know her the way he did. The bite marks on his neck certainly indicated some sort of intimate activity. Whatever's going on between you is your business, I told him calmly. But she's used it to trick you into thinking she's someone she isn't. She did it to me, too, and I fell for it. It's all a scam.
I don't believe it,
he said, still stone-faced.
As queen, she's put into all sorts of tough situations. There must be more to it. She'll change the decree. I'm certain of it.
As queen, I said, imitating his tone, she should have the ability to...
My words fell off as a voice spoke in my head. Lissa's.
Rose, you're going to want to see this, but you have to promise not to cause any trouble.
Lissa flashed a location to me, along with a sense of urgency. Ambrose's hard look shifted to one of concern.
Are you okay?
Yeah, Lissa needs me. I sighed. Look, I don't want us to fight, okay? Obviously, we've each got different views of the situation, but I think we both agree on the same key point.
That kid shouldn't be sent off to die? Yeah, we can agree on that.
We smiled tentatively at each other, and the anger between us diffused.
I'll talk to her, Rose. I'll find out the real story and let you know, okay?
Okay. I had a hard time believing anyone could really have a heart-to-heart with Tatiana. But again, there might be more to their relationship than I realized. Thanks. It was good seeing you.
You too. Now go. Go to Lissa.
I needed no further urging. Along with the sense of urgency, Lissa had passed one other message through the bond that sent my feet flying.
It's about Dimitri. Chapter 23.
I didn't need the bond to find Lissa. The crowd tipped me off to where she and Dimitri were. My first thought was that some kind of stoning or medieval mobbing was going on. Then I realized that the people standing around were simply watching something. I pushed through them, heedless of the dirty looks I got, until I stood in the front row of the onlookers. What I found brought me to a halt. Lissa and Dimitri sat side by side on a bench, while three Maroi and, yikes, Hans sat opposite them. Guardians stood scattered around them, tense and ready to jump in if things went bad, apparently. Before I even heard a word, I knew exactly what was going on. This was an interrogation, an investigation to determine what Dimitri was exactly. Under most circumstances, this would be a weird place for a formal investigation. It was, ironically, one of the courtyards Eddie and I had worked on, the one that stood in the shadow of the statue of the young queen. The court's church stood nearby. This grassy area wasn't exactly holy ground, but it was close enough to the church that people could run to it in an emergency. Crucifixes didn't hurt Strigoi, but they couldn't cross over into a church, mosque, or any other sacred place. Between that and the morning sun, this was probably as safe a location and time as officials could muster up to question Dimitri. I recognized one of the Maroi questioners, Rhys Taurus. He was related to Adrian on his mom's side, but had also spoken in favor of the age decree. So I took an instant dislike to him, particularly considering the haughty tone he used toward Dimitri.
"Do you find the sun blinding?" asked Rhys.
He had a clipboard in front of him and appeared to be going down a checklist.
"No," said Dimitri, voice smooth and controlled.
His attention was totally on his questioners. He had no clue I was there, and I kind of liked it that way. I wanted to just gaze at him for a moment and admire his features.
"What if you stare into the sun?"
Dimitri hesitated, and I'm not sure anyone but me caught the sudden glint in his eyes, or knew what it meant. The question was stupid, and I think Dimitri, maybe, just maybe, wanted to laugh. With his normal skill, he maintained his composure.
"Anyone would go blind staring into the sun long enough," he replied. "I'd go through what anyone else here would."
Rhys didn't seem to like the answer, but there was no fault in the logic. He pursed his lips together and moved on to the next question.
"Does it scald your skin?"
"Not at the moment."
Lissa glanced over at the crowd and noticed me. She couldn't feel me the way I could through our bond. But sometimes, it seemed she had an uncanny sense of when I was around. I think she sensed my aura if I was close enough, since all spirit users claim the field of light around shadow-kissed people was very distinct. She gave me a small smile before turning back to the questioning. Dimitri, ever vigilant, noticed her tiny movement. He looked over to see what had distracted her, caught sight of me, and faltered a little on Reese's next question, which was,
"Have you noticed whether your eyes occasionally turn red?"
Dimitri stared at me for several moments, and then jerked his head back toward Reese.
"I haven't been around many mirrors, but I think my guards would have noticed, and none of them had said anything."
Nearby, one of the guardians made a small noise. He barely managed to keep a straight face, but I think he too had wanted to snicker at the ridiculous line of questioning. I couldn't recall his name, but when I'd been at court long ago, he and Dimitri had chatted and laughed quite a bit when together. If an old friend was starting to believe Dimitri was a Dompier again, then that had to be a good sign. The Moroi next to Reese glared around, trying to figure out where the noise had come from, but discovered nothing. The questioning continued, this time having to do with whether Dimitri would step into the church if they asked him to.
"I can go right now," he told them. "I'll go to services tomorrow if you want."
Reese made another note, no doubt wondering if he could get the priest to douse Dimitri in holy water.
"This is all a distraction,"
a familiar voice said in my ear.
"Smoke and mirrors. That's what Aunt Tasha says."
Christian now stood beside me. "It needs to be done," I murmured back. "They have to see that he isn't Strigoi anymore."
"Yeah, but they've barely signed the age law. The Queen gave the go-ahead for this as soon as the council session let out, because it's sensational and will make people pay attention to something new. It was how they finally got the hall cleared. Hey, go look at the sideshow."
I could almost hear Tasha saying that word for word. Regardless, there was truth to it. I felt conflicted. I wanted Dimitri to be free. I wanted him to be the way he used to be. Yet I didn't appreciate Tatiana doing this for her own political gain, and not because she actually cared about what was right. This was possibly the most monumental thing to happen in our history. It needed to be treated as such. Dimitri's fate shouldn't be a convenient sideshow to distract everyone from an unfair law. Reese was now asking both Lyssa and Dimitri to describe exactly what they'd experienced the night of the raid. I had a feeling this was something they'd recounted quite a bit. Although Dimitri had been the picture of non-threatening composure so far, I still sensed that gray feel to him, the guilt and torment he felt over what he had done as a Strigoi. Yet when he turned to listen to Lyssa tell her version of the story, his face lit up with wonder, awe, worship. Jealousy flashed through me. His feelings weren't romantic, but it didn't matter. What mattered was that he had rejected me, but regarded her as the greatest thing in the world. He told me never to talk to him again, and sworn he'd do anything for her. Again, I felt that petulant sense of being wronged. I refused to believe that he couldn't love me anymore. It wasn't possible. Not after all he and I had been through together. Not after everything we'd felt for each other.
"They sure seem close,"
Christian noted, a suspicious note in his voice. I had no time to tell him his worries were unfounded because I wanted to hear what Dimitri had to say. The story of his change was hard for others to follow, largely because Spirit was still so misunderstood. Reese got as much out of it as he could, and then turned the questioning over to Hans. Hans, ever practical, had no need for extensive interrogation. He was a man of action, not words. Gripping a stake in his hand, he asked Dimitri to touch it. The standing guardians tensed, probably in case Dimitri tried to grab the stake and go on a rampage. Instead, Dimitri calmly reached out and held the top of the stake for a few moments. There was a collective intake of breath as everyone waited for him to scream in pain since Strigoi couldn't touch charmed silver. Instead, Dimitri looked bored. Then he astonished them all. Drawing his hand back, he held out the bottom of his muscled forearm toward Hans. With the sunny weather, Dimitri was wearing a t-shirt, leaving the skin there bare.
cut me with it,
he told Hans. Hans arched an eyebrow.
Cutting you with this will hurt.